The Athletic.
It's Straight Outta Cobham, a show about Chelsea FC from The Athletic. Coming up, we'll try and make sense of a nutty FA Cup quarterfinal. Cucurella scored. Dizazi's disaster. Sterling's shocker. Palmer's poise. Madueke's magnificence. Meanwhile, the women's team sock it to Arsenal. Available for free wherever you get your podcasts and ad-free on The Athletic. This is Straight Outta Cobham. A few days it's been at Stamford Bridge then, gang. Hey, massive win for the women's team in the WSL title race on Friday night, and then Chelsea booking their place in the FA Cup semi-final on Sunday, albeit in a far from straightforward fashion. It's me, Matt. I'm joined today by The Athletic's two Chelsea experts. Hello, Simon Johnson.
Ow! Oh, I've just been hit by that free kick. Sorry.
Oh, lovely. Lovely stuff. Liam Toomey's back with us too. Yeah, okay, Liam?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm just thinking about Chelsea continuing to carve out a niche in the damning victory.
Tell you what, it was a tough game to commentate on, particularly that Sterling free kick. Sam Parkin and I were just like, should we just pretend that that didn't happen and not talk about it? But we sort of had to. We're going to kick off today, as we always do, with some premature adjudications. I will say that we should put a penalty clause in Raheem Sterling's contract, specifically a penalty clause, as in, don't take him anymore, please. 50% record from the spot, and that one was rather limp. Simon, what have you got for me?
Don't play Robert Sanchez in the semi-final, please.
Ooh, nice, yeah. Spicy, but probably on the money. Liam, have you got one?
A message to Axel Disasi. Look up before you hit the ball back towards your own goal. Just to check, even if you think you're convinced of where the goalkeeper is, there's a small chance he might not be exactly where you think he is.
Oh, it was magnificent. All right, let's get into the meat of the game next then.
It's a great run and it's a great goal! Ronnie Madueke! That's it, Chelsea are in the last four with four goals.
So Chelsea through to the semi-finals of the FA Cup. What a wild ride Sunday's game against Leicester was. The Blues eventually triumphing 4-2 after a couple of late goals, a bizarre one, an unlikely goal scorer, the concession of a two-goal lead, a missed penalty, a penalty that was and then wasn't, a yellow that became a red, and a free kick that left the Earth's atmosphere. Liam, you and I were there. Chelsea won the game. So let's focus on that, right? Because they did deserve it. They had 26 shots. Eight of them on target. Leicester had 5-1 in that regard. They made hard work of it, but they were worthy winners.
Yeah, they were. And I mean, they had enough chances to win the game three or four times over. They had enough chances to win the game about 60 minutes earlier than they did. And the fact that they didn't do either of those things helped create this weird atmosphere again. You know, we talk about it every game now, this weird atmosphere in the ground. And the point at which it all turned was the first half penalty. And that's really where I got the idea for what became my match piece, which is that Chelsea are not a serious team, because they were 1-0 up in the game. They were on top. Leicester, who I thought were exceptionally poor and reminded me a lot of Burnley in terms of just how naive and open they were being carved open regularly. And it was a chance to put the game away. You just let the guy who's never missed a penalty take that penalty. You don't let the guy who's missed half of his eight penalties in his career and is clearly in need of a pick-me-up take that spot kick. Not if you're a serious team. Some people in the comments of my piece have made the point that, oh, you know, Manchester United shared the penalty responsibilities with Rashford and Bruno Fernandes. I know it's not unheard of, but those are two very good penalty takers. And Chelsea have one that we know scores in these situations. And the fact that he was persuaded to give the ball up, I think it reflected poorly on him, reflected poorly on Raheem Sterling's judgment. It reflected badly on Pochettino, honestly, because it made him look weak and not having enough of a structure in this team, which is a bigger issue. But most importantly, for our purposes at the game, and I'm aware you kicked off this question, Matt, by asking me to focus on the positives, but I'm just trying to talk about the atmosphere that the game played out in. the fact that Sterling took and then missed that penalty transformed the entire atmosphere of the game. I think at that, until that point, the fans were with Chelsea and it was shaping up to be a pretty routine win. It turned the match into a personal psychodrama about Sterling. It gave the fans immediately something to get on his back about. And we've seen throughout Sterling's career, it doesn't take much for fans to turn on him for whatever reason that is. And even though Chelsea subsequently did go 2-0 up, the atmosphere was never the same. And I think that all fed into what happened after halftime with the crazy, freakish De Zassi own goal. Leicester then really growing into the game. The sound of Leicester fans shouting shoot every time De Zassi got the ball deep inside his own half. The game became something completely different. And to their credit, you have to say, to their immense credit, Chelsea showed again, they keep going. There is a real spirit in this team. There is real quality with Cole Palmer, who showed it at the end of each half when Chelsea needed it most. And they're developing a nice habit of producing these late surges and getting goals when they need to in the last few minutes, when for much of the season, they were actually conceding more late goals than they were scoring. And in the end, they're in an FA Cup semi-final, which is the positive to end all positives, as Pochettino was trying to emphasise in his post-match press conference. But they still found a way to almost snatch disaster from a position of total, supreme control over a team that they were far, far better than. And again, it played out in this kind of weirdly toxic atmosphere that has become uniquely Chelsea this season.
Well, first of all, I don't know whether listeners abroad are aware of what happens in this country every couple of years in England. There's a show called Comic Relief, which raises money using humour to attract donations. It happened on Friday night, but I thought that this game was almost in aid of comic relief because there's certainly lots to laugh about. But what I wanted to just jump on and was point Liam made there with Pochettino and penalties, because I remember this being asked about earlier in the season, of course, the much documented Arsenal incident between Sterling and Palmer. And Pochettino was asked about whose number one penalty taker was. And I think I may have been the one that asked it, or certainly one of the pressers. And he said, don't have a number one penalty taker. It's whoever's in the mood or feels like in the best mood to take it.
The most confident player, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I think that he said.
Well, it didn't apply in this case, did it? It's like, probably De Zassi would have been a better bet. I mean, he clearly can find the net when he puts his mind to it. But also, I just thought, if you remember back to that Arsenal incident, there was Enzo Fernandez who came running over and said, no, Cole, and sort of seemed to pull rank. I think there was also perhaps a bit of a debate at the time whether Enzo was going to take it as well. But Enzo actually went over and made sure that Cole Palmer took that penalty against Arsenal. There was no one there, it seemed, to do that same role. And so, hang on a minute. This is Cole Palmer's. The problem for Raheem Sterling, and I know we've sort of jumped in 2 foot straight away, Matt, on Raheem, and you probably were going to get to that as a question, but the problem is there is this sentiment around him that he's a selfish player, I think, from those that aren't particularly fans of his, and this won't have helped change public opinion in that regard. Neither did the free kick. So I think he's got a long way, bit like Pochettino himself, to win back the crowd.
Yeah, I'll get to a few more Sterling-related questions shortly. Just want to run through some tweets. Thank you to everybody who sent one in. Joseph says, the object is to win the game with a young team. It's not going to be perfect, but picking themselves up and winning sends the message it's going the right way. Alex is approaching this from the other angle. He says, very similar to Spurs away. Chelsea win, but end the game with less credit from whence they started. Even when Leicester went down to 10, we couldn't string two passes together. Louis says, aside from the free cone goal and Leicester worldie, I thought we were brilliant. Leicester are lucky it wasn't 7. The less said about Sterling, the better. But I think it's time for Carney, Mudrick and Madueke to take his minutes as they are the future. Let's get on to Sterling a little bit more. There are loads of you getting in touch about his performance on Sunday. James, Sam, Bobby amongst them. Hakan says, has the culture of the club changed? I can't remember Stamford Bridge booing our own player for an own goal. Now, I don't think that the Chelsea fans were booing him. I think it was just the Leicester fans shouting shoot. But they were definitely booing Raheem Sterling, at least some of them. Prasanna says, does that penalty miss mark the end of Sterling's Chelsea career? He missed a couple of golden chances and now Madueke is waiting in the wings with Hutchinson and Angelo too. Jonathan says, a bit of a knee-jerk reaction to say Sterling should be sold, but he's clearly underperformed this season and his salary and age are completely out of line with the strategy. Producer Lucy was there in the Matthew Harding stand and she managed to capture a bit of the discontent that was amongst the locals. Let's listen to that now. Lucy, we're bringing you in at this point. Tell us a little bit about it, because it wasn't 100% rancor, was it? There were some people trying to back Sterling too.
Yeah, I think, like the chap said, as soon as the penalty was missed, there was just already calls of get him off, he's useless, etc., etc. And then the free kick just exacerbated it even further. But then it was when Mudryk got taken off, and we were kind of, obviously, it was in the opposite corner. So at first, no one really knew. It was like, well, obviously Sterling's going to go off. It wasn't even up for debate. And then when we realised Mudryk was off, again, there was just like a parade of boos. And then the whole stand started singing, "You Don't Know What You're Doing," directed at Pochettino. And then there was some very fruity and unpleasant language directed towards Raheem Sterling. But then you'd have the other fans who were sort of saying, well, what are we going to get from booing him? He's already absolutely shattered, his confidence doesn't exist. Why are we going to get on his back even more and make him feel even worse about himself? So, yeah, it was that constant kind of juxtaposition between the two very different approaches from fans. But it was really unpleasant and really kind of horrible to see. And then obviously when he did go off, started with boos, then he sort of did the clapping gesture to the fans. Then I think more fans did start to clap him, so it wasn't as unpleasant as it could have been. But yeah, it wasn't great.
Just before I throw to you, Simon, on that one, just from my vantage point at the top of the East Stand, A, obviously Sterling had an absolutely terrible game and that can happen to any footballer in any match in the world. But I thought it was to his credit that he kept his head up as he walked off the pitch and he applauded the fans, and everybody in the Upper East Stand around me got to their feet and applauded him off the pitch. Obviously, that wasn't universally happening around the ground, but they were the people that he was looking at, and hopefully that helped him out a little bit. Because, Simon, as I say, footballers have bad games sometimes, don't they? The problem for Sterling is that it's a continuation of the theme of him being judged rightly or wrongly as selfish, because, you know, we think back to Wolves on Christmas Eve and the time he should have squared it, and the fact that he took this penalty, and he seems to have this kind of big brother thing over Cole Palmer, and that's making it difficult for people to warm to him.
Yeah, and also he doesn't do much media. He doesn't put himself out there. Although, you know, he did the classic footballers had a nightmare social media post apology, which, you know, he did it. And it was noticeable how all his teammates replied to him and sort of, I think that the players, his teammates, are very much with him. Another thing which I tweeted about, I thought fair play to him soon after the penalty and the one-on-one miss. It was a fine assist for Cole Palmer for the second goal. The fact that he got himself in that situation, you know, me and Liam were having a chat about this before we came on at the pod, you know, that he doesn't go hiding. You know, when he's having a shocker, he could have easily just gone, could have done a Fernando Torres and just sort of, oh, I don't want the ball, thanks, and just...
He could have been praying for the halftime whistle, like literally just waiting to be... hoping to be hooked at half-time. There are players who would be like that.
And I know, look, the easy response to us saying that is, well, it's the least you should do. You know, he's on 300 plus grand a week. But yeah, he's still a human being at the end of the day. And you could tell, like the scream of anguish, you know, when he missed that one-on-one, you know, it's not like he doesn't care. He's just going through a tough time. It's quite interesting listening to Lucy's review of the sort of battle between fans, because it brought back memories of when I was in the away end at Bournemouth. It was exactly the same when Sterling was booed then. He came on as a substitute that day, and was booed. And there was arguments between fans going on, you know, why are you booing him for? He's our player, and similar sort of response, well, he's something, something, bleep, 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 bleep. You know, I get why he causes so much frustration, that he hasn't lived up to the expectations, but I've always been one to question how booing a player helps the situation. I just think it's very counterproductive. But, you know, those people that do that, they pay a lot of money for their ticket, and they can obviously do what they choose. But I also thought Pochettino hung him out to dry by not subbing him first. And it's actually a bit of an own goal for him, because it brought him into the negativity as well. Now, I understand Pochettino said, well, Mudryk was looking tired and that's why I did it, but it just poured petrol onto the fire.
It felt in the moment like Pochettino was actually trying to protect Sterling from the reaction that his substitution would get. That was my initial reaction when Mudryk's name came up for that substitution, because we'd seen at half time Jesus Perez go up to Sterling and put his arm around him. Like that's clearly been their approach, not just with Sterling, with all the players, any of the Chelsea players that are having a tough time. Pochettino is very much an arm around the shoulder type of coach. He did obviously eventually bring Sterling off, but it felt like a misguided attempt to try to protect him, which only prolonged the pain somewhat. And yeah, the reaction when he did finally come off was one of the weirdest things that I've seen, because this has been part of the Sterling experience all season. I've seen him get a standing ovation this season when he's been substituted, and I've seen him be booed off and booed on. And those things have happened weeks apart, like almost no time. The range of opinions and the range of feelings and the strength of feeling when it comes to Sterling is really a sight to behold when you're at games. I can't really compare it to any other player. There are players that Chelsea fans have just washed their hands of, and there are players they've absolutely idolised and respected and been in their corner. But I don't think I've known a player where it's oscillated so wildly, sometimes from week to week or game to game, as it is with Sterling. But as has been the case at his previous stops as well, it just feels a bit more fraught at Chelsea. And with England, of course, he never seems to have much credit in the bank when he starts playing badly. When he has a bad day, it doesn't feel like he has any real credit in the bank with supporters.
Yeah, well, I think Chelsea and Raheem Sterling are just going to have to make do with one another, because he's on a long contract on big money. He doesn't want to go to Saudi Arabia, apparently, and I don't think anybody's going to want to take him off Chelsea's hands on the kind of wages that he's on. So let's try and give him some love, and hopefully we can get the old Raheem Sterling back. I think that's probably enough negativity. Or let's throw one more in, Simon. How about this? Dean says, why hasn't Poch done anything to build a relationship with the fans? Feels a bit like when Rafa was in charge. There's a little more permanency to Pochettino than there was to Benitez. But is this purely just a he used to manage Spurs thing? Should he be doing a bit more? What more could he do? Come out into the centre circle and, you know, bow to everybody before the game and blow some kisses? What are we expecting from him?
It's a very valid point. I sort of, what, Klopp fist, you know, pumps after a sort of dodgy win against Leicester in the FA Cup. Is that going to win the fans over? It's definitely the Tottenham thing, which has grown in significance since, you know, the longer the sort of unconvincing form has carried on. I think from day one, there was definitely a section of the support that were very, you know, the Tottenham thing was an issue for them from day one. My memory isn't what it was, but I do remember that a lot of Chelsea fans loved his rhetoric at the start. You know, we're Chelsea, we're here to win, no excuses, all of that. And then the fact that Chelsea aren't winning and there are excuses, suddenly, you know, Pochettino is, it's become increasingly, he's not the manager for us. I just think the Chelsea job is a very difficult job at the moment. There's a fan base that want to win now, but Chelsea don't have a squad to win now. So, you know, something's got to give. And unfortunately, the manager is taking most of the blame for it because he's the guy they can publicly aim their frustration at. It's a bit difficult to look up to the box, the VIP box area, and look for the co-owners and sporting directors and chant their abuse at them. Although it has happened, or there has been sort of incidents over the last best part of 2 years, 18 months, where that has taken place. But I think he's got a very difficult job to win over the crowd. Sunday was another example of that, another flashpoint with the Sterling non-sub. Yeah, I don't see what he can do because obviously what he's saying is not winning them over. And in fact, it actually seems to be making the situation worse with some of the things he's coming out with.
Let's get positive then as we round out our coverage of the game, Liam. It was a good day for Marc Cucurella. Got his first Chelsea goal and he got a call up to the Spain squad as well. We can all enjoy the Dizazzi own goal, as we said. I like Conor Gallagher consoling him, and Robert Sanchez kissing him on the neck was a bit weird, but hopefully that helped him. Shall we do the weekly Cole Palmer praise segment? Would you like to take this one, Liam?
He's really good at football.
Can we come up with a tune? You know, like a, I don't know, Lucy's got a, there's a tune that we can play every week. You
go
know,
to for work the, on a jingle.
For the Cole Palmer, yeah, segment.
Maybe there's a Manchester-based band with enough swagger to encapsulate Cole Palmer's performances. He's just a pure footballer. And what's really impressed me about him is that he's just how unfazed he is by everything, by the situation, by what the opposition are doing, by what's going on with the crowd, by the mistakes that his teammates are making.
By Tim Sherwood peppering him with nonsense questions that are designed
with extremely
to upset.
Unfair yeah. questions.
Trying to throw him under the bus, yeah, as you do.
The fact that Sherwood asked that kind of question or put that kind of statement to him, they just need to put some actual players around you, don't they, Cole, was extremely unfair. As with all good trolling, there's kind of a kernel of truth there when you look at some of Chelsea's worst days. Is even when Palmer hasn't had a lot to play with, a lot to work around, he's found a way to make an impact. I think that's a mark of a truly special player. I think it's fair to say that at this point, he's done this over a big enough sample size now, scoring, assisting, being the brain of this attack. I think he is a special player at Premier League level. He's a level above most of this squad right now, and he's the one that everyone looks to when they need his inspiration in the final third. His back heel was absolutely superb. I mean, that sequence should be exciting for Chelsea fans, not just because of what it says about Palmer, but also we've barely seen Carney Chukwuemeka, and yet he scored two of the better goals that Chelsea have scored this season. So I think the prospect of getting more of him on the pitch is a real positive for Chelsea in what remains of this campaign. He has a lot to offer, and he's someone that Palmer can really link up with. I thought Nicholas Jackson was really good. I thought his touch around Vestergaard and then drawing the foul from Doyle, which became the free kick and the red, was excellent. I thought his awareness to set up that goal for Cucurella early in the game, to beat Vestergaard 1v1 and then steady himself, which sometimes Jackson has not been so good at doing, really getting his head up, assessing his options. I think he was really, really impressive. But that sequence, like so many other sequences, started with a Cole Palmer pass down the wing for Malo Gusto, who also has been a massive positive for Chelsea going forward. That Chelsea right flank with Gusto going beyond Palmer is genuinely a problem for teams. And, you know, if you're looking for positives, I think that's where you start with this group, that some of the individuals headlined by Palmer are showing real quality, are showing that they can be part of the next serious Chelsea team, even if this current one is not really. And their spirit is real. They play for each other. They do play for Pochettino, because if they didn't, I think he'd already be gone. with the other issues that we're seeing and with the toxicity in the stadium. So those are all real things, and that those are all real positives for Chelsea fans to hold on to.
The first thing I wanted to flag, I mentioned Tim Sherwood, and maybe he was in a bad mood that night because I was in the media press room when they ran out of curry. And he joined the queue with us. We're all a little bit thrown by this horrific incident. And he ended up sort of, I think, helping himself to some smoked salmon and salad instead. So maybe that threw him into a bit of a funk. But speaking of ex-pro pundits, Martin Keown also came up with a classic in co-coms during the Chelsea-Leicester game. We were talking about Cole Palmer. He said he's the only quality player in this Chelsea side. And then literally 30 seconds later went, my man of the match is Malo Gusto. which I thought was hilarious, even by Martin Keown's interesting standards of co-commentary. But I thought Chukwuemeka, I've always thought this, that he is a problem for Conor Gallagher in terms of whether he stays or goes, etc., which I think we all suspect that he'll be sold, Gallagher, in the summer. Because whilst Gallagher has come up with a few goals recently, I think Chukwuemeka would have played a lot more this season but for injury in the advanced position. And I do think he is a more of a natural finisher than Gallagher is. So I think that was another reminder of that. And Gallagher really struggled, I have to say, in the deeper position next to Caicedo. I thought it was one of his least impressive performances. I don't know we normally talk about Mudryk at some point. I know Lynn's a big fan of his, but I thought he seemed to enjoy that freedom a bit more. And I even saw him sort of try and make some sort of tackles and sort of try and win the ball back kind of thing. He didn't just amble about aimlessly, which it ended up being one of the more enjoyable fan experiences of his career so far at Chelsea, when he was taken off ahead of Sterling.
Massive cheer.
Because he got the biggest ovation, I think, that he's had perhaps at Stamford Bridge since he arrived.
Yeah, let's see if he can maintain it. Everybody's going off with their international teams around the globe for a fortnight now. Chelsea will play Manchester City in the semi-final of the FA Cup then. I think we all sighed when that draw came out. But remember, they haven't beaten Chelsea in either Premier League game so far this season. It'll be played on either the 20th or 21st of April, which will mean the Premier League game against Brighton, like the ones against Spurs and Arsenal, will need rearranging. Well, that wasn't the only huge game at Stamford Bridge this weekend. We'll talk the women's team next.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Champions who knew they had to win this game to stay in control of the title race, and they've done just that. It was a comfortable, confident performance from Chelsea.
Right, Chelsea welcomed Arsenal to Stamford Bridge on Friday night. They lent them some socks and then pulled their pants down. Here to tell us more about it is the incomparable Jesse Parker Humphreys. Jesse, that was a brilliant and well-deserved win.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, almost kind of beyond anything I could have imagined or expected, sock-related preamble included. Yeah, I think Chelsea, given the schedule, went into the game wanting a win, obviously, but I think to perform at that level and to so comprehensively beat Arsenal, I mean, it could and probably should have been 5 or 6. Definitely the most impressive win they've had over Arsenal since that FA Cup final a couple of years ago.
What was it like in the stadium? For anyone who doesn't know, the kickoff was delayed by 30 minutes because Arsenal bought White Sox instead of Red Sox, which is high fast, but it meant the kickoff was delayed by 30 minutes, but it didn't seem to matter too much.
I know. Just to run around to the Megastore and get some Chelsea away socks. I don't know, Stamford Bridge isn't that hard to get round quickly, but obviously they needed time to re-warm up again. I actually think it worked really well because I think, obviously, coming into the game, there was 32,000 people there, but I think it was quite, you know, a big mix. Arsenal had brought 6,000 and, you know, I think just in the home stands, you still got that sort of general mix of sort of day trippers as much as Chelsea fans. But DJ did a cracking job. And I actually think that 30 minutes really helped rev up the crowd even more. There's often a thing with women's football, I find as well, where people don't necessarily get into their seats in time because they're not as like all gung-ho on the game maybe as you might get at the men's game. It was almost like the 30 minutes gave everyone a chance to trickle in and get ready to go.
It's a significant win, obviously, because of the opposition and the state of the title race, but particularly given the amount of absentees that Chelsea have got, right? I just had a quick look. Obviously, Kerr, Fischl, we know about. Ramirez, Mielder, Bright, and Katrin Berger, whether you put her down as a first teamer anymore, I'm not sure. But it's a lot of players to be missing for one of the biggest games of the season.
Yeah, I definitely think, you know, Mayra Ramirez and Natalie Bjorn, they're two, if they were fit, they would have started. So I think it's testament, actually, to what Emma Hayes does all the time. She really relies on an entire squad. And, you know, we see in the WSL, some teams plump for bigger squads, some teams go for smaller squads. And Chelsea, I think, are the only one who go for a big squad, but genuinely use everyone. And I think it's in games like this, you see where that really comes through. I mean, Khadija Buchanan, I think, deserves a lot of credit because not only has she barely played this season, she's not even been with the team because she went to the Gold Cup with Canada. So she only just got back for that. So she missed, you know, a large number of games and a lot of training as a result. And you've got people like Shuken Uskun, who's defending against Bonnie Shaw 8 days ago at centre-back. And suddenly she's playing up front, 2 goals and assist against Arsenal. It's incredible, really, like what Hayes manages to get out of the players that she has at her disposal.
You mentioned the significance of beating City in the Conti Cup semi just to kind of rubber stamp that Chelsea can get it done against their title rivals. Obviously, that's more significant in terms of the league when you do it in a league fixture. And 6 points the gap now between Chelsea, City and Arsenal. Are you counting Arsenal out of the title race now?
Yeah, I think it will be far too much for them to come back from, given that they've also still got to go away to Manchester City too.
Yeah, fingers crossed. So, a terrific win then, and yet that's not what you wrote about in the aftermath of the game. Sock's the big story, and Emma put her foot in it.
Yeah, I mean, this is also, I guess, kind of what made the win so impressive, given the sheer amount of noise that managed to envelop the club on Thursday. All WSL managers were being asked about player-coach relationships. It's obviously been a big story in the league as a result of Leicester investigating Willie Kirk over an alleged player relationship. And Hayes sort of dived into the question and went straight into saying player-coach relationships are inappropriate, but so are player-player relationships, which understandably, and then unfortunately publicly, pissed off one of her players who's in a public relationship with another player on her team, Jess Carter. I think Hayes did very well after the game. I think she spoke very well on the topic. And she said that, you know, the word she used was the wrong choice of words and that she values her dressing room as being one where they can have open and honest conversations, that where people disagree, there's space to talk it out and kind of understand other points of view. And I don't think anyone's disputing that some of the things she talked about, the difficulties of managing player-to-player relationships, are obviously true in the way that any relationships, friendships in dressing rooms are hard to manage. People management is part of being a coach in football. It's a team sport. The irony being kind of the way she talks about how they talked out felt like exactly what she should have said around player-player relationships in the first place. So, I mean, kudos to her, I guess, for owning up to it. But I think she was very lucky in some senses that her tactics and her team paid off so well, to the point where, you know, regardless of what she said afterwards, it was kind of hard to reflect in that moment, at least, that it had a bad impact simply because Chelsea had done so well in the game.
Hi, Jesse. I'll get on to my questions that I had, but I feel like it's not quite Yeah, to follow on from what you've just said, to leap into the rather light-hearted question that I was going to come up with next. So I'm going to go on a slightly serious one, and then I'll get on to what I was going to ask. Do you think that for Emma, it's also a good lesson to learn ahead of going to the USA, where, of course, everything she says will come under even more of a microscope than obviously as Chelsea women's coach?
Yeah, I think it was interesting. She also spoke as part of her quasi-apology about not wanting to be a clickbait manager. And I found her use of the word clickbait interesting, because for me, that kind of means when people are sort of misrepresenting what you said to get people interested. And Emma, as much as she might regret it, said that player-player relationships were inappropriate. Unfortunately, that was just the quote. I don't really think that was clickbait, but it did make me think maybe she hasn't quite twigged how much, you know, the world has changed and the focus on women's football has changed. She also, it was, I thought, interesting, referenced the media sort of hanging her out to dry a little bit on it, which again, I found very interesting, because there weren't many journalists in the room who'd made public comments on what she'd said. And the one who did was the one who then managed to get embroiled in the player liking the tweet about it. So I thought that was an interesting thing, but maybe reflected about how social media drive so much of the conversation in women's football in a way that it didn't. You know, Emma Hayes is a manager who, as recently as 3 years ago, was calling for goals to be smaller in the women's game. I feel like if she said that now, it would have had a similar level of reaction. And maybe that suggests that there's stuff in the past that she said that's been controversial that hasn't got the attention because the women's game just wasn't where it was now. And you're right, in America, with the US women's national team job, I think it will be even bigger.
Okay, now going back to the game, did you get an idea of how much Chelsea charged for the socks? Because they're obviously trying to comply with PSR, and I just wonder whether this gave them an opportunity to make some money out of them. Right?
I am fairly certain one less Academy star will have to be sold this summer. Duncan Alexander did the maths. He claims it was about £260, he reckoned. There was a sale on the socks. We saw, but you needed a code, and we wondered whether the megastore wouldn't have been so kind to give the Arsenal kit man the code when he rushed round before kickoff.
I just wonder whether there's a loyalty, you know, whether Arsenal earn some loyalty points or something to go and get some other kit.
I mean, if the megastore's anything to go by, I'm surprised they didn't have to wait about 2 months for them to be delivered to them.
I reckon they were waiting for the discount code, and that's why kickoff was delayed by half an hour. Jesse, one more before we let you go. It's obviously a massive month with the Conti Cup final to come against Arsenal at the end of it. Before that, though, Ajax on Tuesday in the first leg of the Champions League quarter final. More than 30,000 tickets sold for this one at the Johan Cruyff Arena. I guess we're expecting Chelsea to get through over the two legs, but Ajax have been one of the surprise packages of the tournament so far, right? They weren't expected to get out of their group.
Yeah, definitely. Ajax came through the group of death, as it was termed, and it was very impressive. It had three Champions League quarterfinalists from last season in it, and they came out despite, you know, being at the group stage for the first time. They're a really talented young team. I do think over two legs, you know, Chelsea should get through, but it'll be interesting. Their group stage was heavily weighted to home wins. So I think they won all of their home games and they didn't win any of their away games. So I think it will obviously be a case of Chelsea sort of, I guess, being aware of that. And I think they will be. I think also the Arsenal win will be such a massive boost. I think to have gone into this game, you know, potentially having lost at the Bridge, it would have felt like a lot more important, a lot more was on the Champions League. Whereas I hope the team will have like a bit more freedom as a result of playing so well against Arsenal.
Fingers crossed. Magnificent. Thank you as ever, Jesse.
Thanks for having me.
Right, elsewhere in Chelsea news, a mixed bag for the academy sides this weekend. The under-21s lost the battle of the two-time European champions on Friday night. They went down 3-2 to Nottingham Forest in PL2. Dujuan Richards and Tyreek George got the Chelsea goals. The under-18s left it late, but they got the dub against Reading at Cobham on Saturday. Ato Ampa stepped off the bench to give Chelsea the lead 88 minutes in. It was his first appearance since September after injury. Frankie Runham then added a second with the last kick of the contest. And that's going to bring us to a close for today's pod. Remember, you can follow us
on X, formerly known as Twitter, at SO Cobham Pod. If you want to leave us some nice words on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your pods, that would be appreciated too. TheAthletic.com/ChelseaPod is the place to go to sign up and read all of Simon and Liam's most excellent work. We're going to have a couple of shows off now for the international break. Simon's been in the red zone for a while now, so he needs a couple of pod breaks. We will be back 27th, 28th of March, TBC, building up anyway to the next game, which is against, who can tell me? Says, having forgotten it, looks Burnley, of course. How could we forget Burnley on their two-game unbeaten run? That's going to be a tough one. Toughest of the season, perhaps. They come to Stamford Bridge on the 30th. We'll preview that. We'll tell you how the women got on in their Champions League quarterfinal. Loads more besides. Until then, it's thanks to Liam, Lucy, Simon and Jesse, and to you for joining us as well. Bye for now.
The Athletic.